Well, hey everyone, welcome to the Slingshot Group podcast. I'm your host, Tim Footsie of Slingshot Group, where we help you build remarkable teams through staffing and coaching. And for our conversation today, I'm joined by two people from our team, Brooke Hodnerfield and Matt Wright. Brooke is the VP, Vice President of Nonprofit at Slingshot, and Matt Wright is our Vice President of Senior Leadership. I love these two leaders. I love how they show up with humility. I love that they are curious learners. I love how God has wired them for this work that we get to do in building the kingdom. And I love how he's prepared them for the roles that they serve in now with their collective experience. I could brag on them all day. That's not what we're here to do. But what you need to know is that Brooke and Matt are on the front lines working with teams, and they see the top things that are holding them back. In fact, we talk about those things every week. So in this conversation today, as we lean into what makes teams healthy, we're going to hit the topic of conflict. And this topic is so important because every team has conflict. I mean, if your team is bigger than just you, it involves people. And when it involves people, there's going to be conflicting views, opinions, and thoughts on strategy. So working out how to keep that conflict healthy, that tension healthy, is what is going to move your ministry organization forward in a healthy way. Every one of us has to learn how to deal with conflict. The presence of conflict isn't a sign of an unhealthy team. Every leader, every team, every organization has conflict. This conversation is to help us learn the do's and don'ts of healthy conflict. So, Brooke and Matt, you are both in situations every week where we're working with a leader, a team, or an organization that is in the middle of conflict. How do you distinguish between healthy and unhealthy conflict? Let's start with you, Brooke.
Well, yeah, if you are in the business of people, you're going to come face to face with conflict and at every turn. I think in terms of healthy versus unhealthy, I think a lot of it has to do with your posture. It can be a very direct conversation or a direct happening, or it can be kind of an indirect sideline out of the side of your mouth with a conversation on, you know, in more of a toxic environment. So for me, I would say posture and then location of where that conversation's happening.
So Brooke, when you say posture, is that something mm-hmm. that you look for when you walk into the context of a given team? What are you looking for?
Yes, I think posture of assumption or filling in the gaps is often something that I would say is an unhealthy posture versus having that posture of, you know what, I'm curious, I'm going to lean in, I'm going to ask some questions versus assume. So it's kind of how you enter the conflict maybe is what I'm talking about as it relates to posture.
Right, great. Matt, what would you add to that? How do you distinguish between healthy and unhealthy conflict?
Yeah, it's a great question, Tim. And I think the first thing I would say is to underscore what you said at the beginning. Your organization is experiencing conflict. Even if it's just you and you're the only person, you're probably a conflicted person. You've probably got internal conflict. When you have more than one person in an organization, there is conflict. It's unhealthy if you don't know about it. So if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, there's not conflict in my organization, then there's a problem. You need to know about it. You need to know about the conflict because it is absolutely happening. Then I would probably encourage you to think about conflict in two big buckets. First, we can have ideological conflict. Ideological conflict of ideas. That's where we're trying to wrestle through what is the best idea. And I think ideological conflict is healthy. If you are not experiencing ideological conflict, I don't think you could say we are getting the best ideas out of our team. Ideological conflict means we are doing the hard work to work together and figure out what is the best idea, the best ideology, the best thing moving forward. There's ideological conflict, and then you have interpersonal conflict. Ideological conflict is conflict of ideas. Interpersonal conflict is conflict between individuals. And sometimes unhealthy conflict means that we are letting interpersonal conflict get in the way of ideological conflict. I think oftentimes where we get in trouble as leaders and as managers of organizations is when we confuse ideological conflict with interpersonal conflict, or we confuse interpersonal conflict with ideological conflict, where maybe we're in a room and you've got two or three team members that are really tangling hard on what's the best strategy to fix this problem. And I mean, they're going at it. They're going at it hard, trying to figure out what the best idea is. And it might make you a little bit uncomfortable because things could get heated. Maybe voices rise a little bit. Maybe people are really passionate about their ideas. But I would argue that's good conflict. That's what you want to have. But if you see things going sideways, if you see things going beneath the surface, if you hear things like, hey, you always this, or you never that, or that's just because of this, well, now we're moving into an interpersonal space, and that's not healthy conflict. So to directly answer your question, I think first, if you don't know about the conflict, that's unhealthy. The conflict is happening. You need to know about the conflict. Second, if you don't understand the difference between ideological conflict and interpersonal conflict, and if you confuse the two, if you let ideology get in the way of good interpersonal relationships, or bad interpersonal relationships get in the way of determining the best strategy going forward, then that's unhealthy.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Matt. You know, a shout out to our very first podcast episode with Steve Kass and the book he wrote about managing leadership anxiety, yours and theirs. That's interpersonal. That's working out what's going on. And the reminder that every organization deals with this and not being aware of it is when it becomes unhealthy. But it almost seems like churches and nonprofits deal with it even more than secular organizations. This is the work. Yeah, this is the work that we do. It's not just a job. It's a what? It's a calling. So the people we work with are invested. You know, what you just said, Matt, gives you an insight into executive team meetings at Slingshot. You know, we're a virtual company. We meet every other week on Zoom for multiple hours, but we get together once a quarter in person. And there's a lot of conflict and tension in the room, but we love each other. It's that conflict and tension that moves the ministry forward. This is the work we do. It's not just a job. It's a call. We care about it. So the people we work with are invested, and that comes with emotion. Brooke, how have you found that to be true in the nonprofit teams that you walk into, you work with, that you help move forward, that you find staff for? And if so, what advice would you give to the leaders listening to this to be more self-aware for how we handle these different types of conflict?
I mean, anywhere there is someone that feels called to something, they're going to have emotion around it. And so how they enter the conversation, how they enter the work they do, the posture they have in that, they're going to bring their own junk. So to Matt's point about interpersonal conflict, you're going to have your own stuff, your own perspectives, honestly, like your own triggers and your own value system and all those things that come into play. So even before you may even encounter conflict, you're carrying that stuff with you into that situation, into the conversation, into that meeting, whatever that looks like. And so I would say, yes, that you see emotions run really high. Mm-hmm. And then especially in the case of like where you've got founders involved, where this is so closely tied to their identity, even that's its whole own probably podcast, honestly. But how they navigate that, how a leader navigates that, I think you have to look reflective, honestly, to consider, why do I have this response? What's the underlying thing here that's bigger than maybe the actual reason I'm showing up in a certain way? Like sometimes it's a trigger of some sort that maybe a leader is unaware that they are experiencing this, or circling in and out of almost taking something personal when maybe that's not the cause. It's just really understanding the why behind why they respond the way they do. But emotion gets tied in so often that I think taking a step back initially, if you start to feel that friction and brush up against something that just doesn't feel right, or you step on a landmine you didn't even realize you were stepping on, is a first thing to do, because we don't think very clearly when our head's clouded with emotion. And emotion's great. I mean, that's an inner compass and a gauge for us. But if we're only responding out of emotion, that's not a good place to begin.
Brooke, let's break that down really quickly. And it absolutely is another podcast episode, but it was going to be my follow-up question before you even brought it up. Founders, I mean, there's a lot of emotion, Matt Wright, in your area. Lead pastors that have led for a long time. Some have been church planters, aka founders. Brooke, how do you handle a founder who's coming in with unhealthy conflict? I know it's a whole other conversation, but what's the top thing that you suggest to those founders to be more open-minded?
Sometimes I think it has to do with their own ability to want to confront truth. And sometimes that's something that people are willing to do, and other times they're not. So I think having someone alongside, making decisions and having conversations, not isolated, but with people that can offer perspective and truth and that care about you as a person and are maybe unrelated to the mission of the organization. So they don't really have skin in the game to say which direction you turn, because it can feel really isolating and lonely in those places. And everyone seems to have an agenda. If you're a board member or staff, you don't, as a leader, you don't know who's a safe person to process those things with. So I think one, it's, are you willing to confront truth? Are you willing to receive the truth and explore it? And then two, finding someone alongside or someones that can speak truth that don't have skin in the game.
That's interesting, Brooke, that you talk about isolation and loneliness. I mean, we see that a lot at the top of the organizations that we work with. Isolation and loneliness can often lead to eroded self-awareness. Matt, I'd love your thoughts on this, because this is why we love and support organizations and have so much empathy for the senior leader or the founder, and why we support organizations implementing some kind of personality assessments that are part of their culture. We encourage them to lean into those. Why? Because great leaders are what? Self-aware. We have to know what it's like on the other side of you. Matt, speak to that a little bit.
You know, oftentimes in an organization, when you've got a couple of people that are wrestling over an idea and they're experiencing conflict, you end up having three sets of core values at play. And oftentimes the conflict is between those three sets of core values. So quick definitions of what I mean by this. Every organization, whether you have identified them or not, is kind of irrelevant, but you've got a mission. Why does the organization exist? Mission, why does the organization exist? And then you have some core values. Core values are the things that are DNA level important to you. These are the things that you value more than anything else. It's why we do what we do. It kind of paints, this is who we are as an organization. And both of those mission and identity pieces, those are DNA identity level questions to answer. So you've got an organization core values, but then each of us as individuals, we also have our own personal core values. You might have, and you know, you can go I've got a core value of integrity. Everybody's got a core value of integrity. I'm talking about the unique core values that are unique to only you. I've got a core value personally of get better. And I value all people, but whenever somebody shows up and they want to get better, something lights up in me. I get so excited about that. When an organization wants to get honest and how can we get better? Tim, you're chuckling right now because you can see this in the way that I work, right? I've got a personal value around get better. Where we were yesterday was good, don't get me wrong, but I always want to grow and achieve. I want to get better. I worked for years with another individual and I love him dearly, and he has got a core value of safety and sameness. If it works, we're going to keep it. And here I am with a core value of get better, and then our organization's got core values on top of it. So if you think about that, you've got this triangle, if you will, of core values. And most of the time, the conflict exists between the core values, between maybe my core value of wanting to get better, his core value of wanting safety and sameness, and the organization's core value of wanting to grow in our effectiveness. And how are we going to do that? So self-awareness was the question that you asked him. If we can't be leaders who are self-aware to understand, see very clearly, okay, here's the core values of the organization. Here's my core value around whatever it might be, getting better. And here's how my core value is fighting with their core value around sameness. Now I can see better. I can understand what's going on. It's not that I am, that I'm having this conflict with somebody who lacks integrity or conflict with somebody who isn't committed to the overall organization's core values. This is an individual to individual kind of core value conflict. And that helps me care about the other individual. It helps me see them better. And it helps me better figure out, okay, now how do we find a solution where together we can serve the core values of the organization rather than just my core value or their core value? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And as I'm listening to you, Matt, it makes me want to remind our listeners today that you want conflict on your team. You absolutely
You've gotta have
want
it.
Conflict. Yeah, because if you don't, then perhaps you don't have diversity in values. And you're not. You need those diverse value systems, and you need to be rubbing up against contending thoughts about the way forward. That's going to get you to the right result. So let's break this down to some specific situations where we often face conflict. First, let's talk about conflict with the team leader, with the boss. A recent study indicated that 57% of employees quit because of their boss, because of their team leader. Brooke, are you finding this to be the case in leaders you're talking with?
Yes. I would say that it is not uncommon that conversations we have with people that have just hit that wall where they've made a decision to make a move. It's because they feel unheard, unseen. They're not being invested in. There's just lack of presence from the person that they report to. And that could be in many different aspects and ways. They don't feel like their boss or their leader just gets them, understands them, knows them, or I would say the term, you know, underutilization of my talents or my skills, or, you know, they just know that they're not going to flourish because the person that has the most impact and control over helping to steward that is not stewarding it or can't see it themselves. So definitely would agree with that, for sure.
Brooke, when you're talking to potential candidates, leaders that are coming to us, sensing a Holy Spirit move, they want to move to another ministry organization, another nonprofit, and you sense that they are not dealing with conflict well in their current environment, how do you lean into that?
First question I ask is, have you had that conversation? Because if it can be internally a conversation you're having in frustration, but you have to advocate for yourself and you have to speak up and you have to, it's just like, you know, in our spouse relationships, we all, to your point, Matt, have different value systems and are viewing things differently and we're not mind readers. So helping someone see clearly, help them to understand in a way that is honoring to that person, but also helps them just make that jump and be really clear about maybe ways that they haven't even seen that you could step in a different way, or you could support something that really is impacting the larger organization and could really help have some movement as a result, and just naming some of those things. So I think having the conversation and advocating for yourself, first off, and ensuring that that space is even given to have that kind of conversation. I think the larger problem is if I ask that, and they say, I try, but my boss keeps canceling our one-on-one, or that person is just not present, or they don't listen. It's like a lost in translation. I've tried that angle. You know, that's I would say more common than not, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, we obviously talk to leaders in transition every day. And I know that all of us have had the pointed conversation with leaders entering into transition. Hey, there's one major thing you're going to take with you to your next role, and that's you. And so use this time to work out how you can reinvent yourself as a leader, because there are two sides to this, right, Matt? The boss and the employee. What are the do's and don'ts of conflict between a team leader, a boss, and employee?
Yeah, boy, I love that. I love that there are two sides, because we're going to have people who are listening to this who are both a boss and a team member. You're both a team leader and a team member. And so we have to handle this well on both of those sides, because I'm going to expect that there will be conflict up and down. Even if you're a lead pastor, you've probably got a board, there will be conflict up and down. So if I'm thinking about conflict going up, if I'm experiencing conflict going up, first, again, I want to determine, is this interpersonal conflict or ideological conflict? If it's interpersonal conflict, that's a different set of skills. You're going to handle interpersonal conflict differently. If you handle interpersonal conflict with ideological tools, you will not achieve a good result at the end of it. You need to use interpersonal tools to address interpersonal conflict. But if we're thinking about ideological conflict, I would encourage somebody who's thinking about conflict up ideologically with your leader, with your team leader, I would first affirm your commitment to the overall mission of the organization, which demonstrates that you understand why we are all here. You understand the values, you understand the mission, all those things about who we are and where we are going. First, before we talk about the issue, I want to affirm the commitment and your understanding of that. The second thing that I would encourage you to do is to affirm your commitment to the relationship. I know that this is not an interpersonal thing, and I hope that you know how much I respect you, how much I value our friendship, or if you don't have a friendship, that's okay, how much you value our relationship, all of those things. So I want you to affirm, I understand where we're going, and this is not an interpersonal thing. This is purely ideological. I don't want anything to get in the way of us as a relationship. And then with those two things said, that's when you can talk about the ideological conflict. And I would just encourage you, be well spoken. And what that means is you might need to be well prepared. Brooke is one of the most well prepared individuals I've ever worked with. She's amazing. But I don't know that it's to a fault. Brooke, it makes you so good in these ideological situations because you're thought through. You've thought through the pros and the cons. You've thought about why this particular idea would serve the organization's values. And if you haven't thought through it, you're not going to lead out there without having thought through it first. You're not going to speak carelessly. So what I would say to the person who's thinking about ideological conflict up is be prepared. Don't speak carelessly. Don't speak off the cuff. I know you're going to think it's going to be easier if I just go in there and I wing it. It will be less effective. And then the last step that I'll tell you is to remember whose job it is to make the decision. We serve churches, and that's a lot of my role primarily is to serve churches. And I remind people all the time, who is going to be held disproportionately accountable before God himself for the outcome of this decision? Who's the person who is appointed to make this decision? And at the end of the day, if that's not you who is appointed to make this decision in your particular context, then the right thing to do is to serve. The right thing to do is to be okay. And you can vigorously argue your ideological point. But if the people who get to make this decision, who are going to be held accountable for how well this decision goes, if they decide to go in a different direction, you don't sabotage, you don't, I told you so, you don't go through all that stuff and go sideways and unhealthy. That's what interpersonal conflict does, by the way, because that points to me and I want to be right and I want them to be wrong. Instead, what you do is you get on board because you care about the organization and you care about the individual who's over you. You get on board, And you do everything you can to help that decision win. One caveat that I would say with all this, and this is where I've seen many people get in trouble as they're trying to deal with conflict up. They back themselves into what I call integrity corners, where they make the ideological conflict an integrity issue. And it's, if you decide this, then somehow I am out of integrity staying with that decision. And what happens when you do that as a leader is that if they don't decide where you're going, all of a sudden you either stay and you've kind of said, now I think we're out of integrity, or you go and you're leaving a job that you really didn't want to have to leave. And you find yourself in a spot saying, gosh, was that really worth me leaving right now? So my caution is beware of backing yourself into an integrity corner.
Yeah, that's a really important reminder. I mean, go back 5 or 10 seconds in the podcast if you're listening and remind yourself of that one, because it's so easy to not realize you've backed yourself in there until you're in there, right, Matt? And you've got to be so careful. And also a good reminder to start with affirmation, affirm the person, affirm the mission. Mm-hmm. And then I'm always a fan of announcing yourself. I mean, you can say, hey, I've got a hard thing I want to say right now.
Yeah.
And announcing yourself that way. But Matt, I've seen you live this out with on our team when there's been something that you haven't necessarily agreed with.
That can't be true.
You are a circle the wagons kind of guy, Matt.
Well, yeah. You've said to me, I don't have to like true. It. But I have no doubt that you are 150% moving forward, arm in arm, when we walk out of that room.
Absolutely, Tim. And I hope that you know through that I care about the mission of Slingshot. I care about who we are and being consistent in who we are. And I care about the relationship with you. So in the way that I bring ideological conflict, I want you to know that conflict, I hope, comes across as a good thing, not a bad thing. I hope it comes across as, I'm trying to help us get to the best idea. And at the end of the day, if you make a decision, because you're the one who's disproportionately held accountable to how that decision goes, it's your call. And I'm okay with the fact that it's your call. And I'm great to serve you and to support the organization. I feel great about that. And this is what I would say to the listener. If you're in a place where your leader or your leader's leaders or your leader's leader's leaders, you find yourself where you cannot trust the decisions that they are making over and over and over again, it may not be that they're the ones that need to change. It may be time for you to look elsewhere. Yeah. And that's really, really, and I want to be very gentle with that statement, but that could be the case. Sometimes we see people who feel like they have been fighting up for so long that they don't know how to stop fighting up. Mm. And it ends up being terrible for the culture.
Yeah. And talk to somebody in process. It's so important. And as I'm listening to you talk, Matt, I want to add that conflict goes wrong when it's responded to emotionally. If you need to give yourself a little time out before you respond, take the time out. Listen to your internal traffic light. I think we've spoken about this before. If it's green, go for it. If it's orange, then take notice. If it's red, then take a time out, because we don't want to be reactive. We don't want to react instead of tactically approach conflict in a healthy and productive way. And sometimes conflict is just with the boss or an individual, but often we find that when we work with organizations that there's deep-rooted conflict between the teams. Mm. And we see all kinds of reasons for this. When it becomes process versus mission, competing ideas responded to emotion, like we just talked about, support versus ministry. You know, in big nonprofits and churches, we have support ministries and we have the ones that are on the combat, you know, hand to hand, that are on the ground. How tension can turn into conflict so quickly. Brooke, how can we as leaders handle conflict in a healthy way when that conflict is happening within teams in our organization?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really easy to get reactive because you know something's wrong and you start to smell smoke. And so you just want to respond. And the first thing I think to do is identify the source, to discern and take a moment before you just full bore charge ahead and start trying to combat hand to hand, as you said, Tim. Actually consider, okay, where's the source, and be thoughtful about how you approach. Because once you start down that path, it's hard to undo. So you want to be thoughtful in the way that you engage in that. So identifying the source or sources, sometimes that could be in multiple places. Eliminating side conversation, those toxic conversations that are happening, or everyone's in the room together. We've all said, yes, we're good with that. And then later on, we're all over here chatting about something, or there's people that are kind of going up and, you know, grouping together and having additional group think and conversations when really those things should have been, you know, shared in the larger group context before it got out of hand into a side conversation. And then once you figure out, you know, where's the source, who are the people that, or people group that is causing the conflict, dealing with it kindly and directly. I think, Tim, I love the way you diffuse the conversation by saying, like, hey, let's have this. We have a hard conversation. We have something we have to deal with here that's really important. And I care about you enough to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. So coming at it from a place of relationship, but also not skirting around it. I think the worst thing we can do, you said the word clarity earlier, Matt. I think we say this all the time. Kindness is clarity, but approaching it in a relational way. And then also just like, let's get to the root cause. Let's have a conversation where we can honor one another in that and have clarity from each party as to what the situation at hand is. There may be things that you have, question mark or guess around, but ultimately they can speak into that too. So making space to have just a productive conversation. And then I would say to prevent unhealthy conflict from happening within teams is just creating a space where you as a leader are cultivating gatherings and connections with your team in a way that's going to produce ongoing safe place to have those kind of conversations. If you're going to shut down people immediately, if they start to challenge or bring up a different route or a different idea, and maybe even take it personally, people aren't going to bring those things to the conversation. And you've immediately taken out the opportunity for people to have a safe place to step into and have healthy conflict. So to do that on an ongoing basis, and then honestly, just keep a feedback loop going. I know one of the questions I really value in our one-on-one conversations with my team is just, what is an obstacle that I can help you remove? And so is that me? Is that a process? Is it something like, because there's obstacles, we deal with them every day. What are you butting up against over and over and over again? Like, let's get ahead of the conflict versus run into it after the fact.
Great practical steps there, Brooke. Really great. As we close, I want to shift to the tensions and benefits of building and leading a multi-generational team with a culture where conflict is welcomed, not discouraged. Because we're seeing in the work that we do so much more conflict as the generations, as new generations move into leadership together. And I want to talk about learning from these different generations, being curious. Matt, how have you encountered instances where generational differences led to conflict within the teams that you've worked with? And how would you address that?
Wow. Generational conflicts among teams is pretty common. And we see that all the time. I think all of us, as we coach and we counsel organizations, we can see that it's just different. And it's interesting. I would actually even go back to the core value conversation, because I think different generations, different buckets of age groups have different core values, different things that are important to them. I think about my life when I was in my 20s, development was really, really important to me. Upward mobility was really, really important to me. I moved into my 30s and I had kids. Stability began to be more important to me. And flexibility to be able to spend time with my kids, that became more important to me. So I think we get into trouble as followers of Jesus. Anytime we label as followers of Jesus, anytime we label an individual as one of them, that's just a boomer. That's just an Xer. That's just a millennial. That's just whatever it might be. Anytime we label it an individual as one of them, bad things happen. We almost never have good fruit from broad labels. It almost never happens. So rather than looking at your team as, well, I've got a whole bunch of millennials, so I just need to figure out how to lead those Xers or a bunch of boomers or whatever it might be, they're individuals and they're all different. And nobody wants to be put in a bucket and treated just like everybody else. We know what your team wants. Your team wants for you to get to know them, for you to get to know their core values, for you to understand what they are uniquely great at and uniquely struggling at. I think when you start to look at your team as a group of individuals and training your team to see each other as individuals, sure, there might be some things that are beneficial for you to read about as it describes all the different generations. And I'm not trying to put those things down. I'm just saying focus on the individual and that relationship before you focus on painting with a broad brush of the generation. And I think you will have much, much better results.
gold right there. I feel like we are just getting started in this conversation, but I hope if you're listening today, you are doing an inventory right now of whether or not you do have conflict on your team, you need it, and whether or not it is in healthy column or the unhealthy column. And I want to give you a quick filter today as we close out, as you take inventory about this conflict, how you can move forward in a healthy way. Start with relationships. Always have relational context because you need that to deal with conflict in a healthy way. Like Matt just said, see the individual. Don't group them, see the individual. Embrace compromise. Calculated compromise is often your strongest tool and how you can continue to build relationship. Also, stay on mission. Keep the mission in front of you in every conversation you have, and then be open-handed. Be willing to learn. As you have competing ideals and competing opinions, what can you learn from the other person as you're engaging in this conflict? Brooke and Matt, thank you so much for engaging in this conversation today, and love getting to serve with both of you and how we support and serve organizations. I hope this conversation has been helpful to you, the listener, and you'll share it with a friend, you'll subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Meanwhile, thanks for being with us today, and until next time, stay curious and reach for the remarkable.